WMFO, Medford. Good morning, and welcome to the Grand Hour, featuring radio dramatists the French would refer to as Théâtre d'Imagination. It's the 3rd of June, I'm Arthur, and this morning I've selected some familiar household names for this program. First up, episode 15, Rocky Fortune, the Museum Murder, with an original air date of the 19th of January, 1954. This was featured on NBC.
Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. Frank Sinatra, starring as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune. Hi. Well, I landed myself a new job last week, again. Inside talker on a Manhattan sightseeing tour. Grant's Tomb, Chinatown, the Empire State Building. Brother, I've been. The place that really gets me, though, is the Museum of Ancient History. Man, they got dead people laying all over that joint. Some of them in mummy cases 5,000 years old. Now, I don't object to a few old corpses, but they tried to embalm a fresh one named Rocky Fortune. All right, ladies and gentlemen, as you will note, we are progressing up Central Park West, and on your right is the largest civic park to be found inside the city the size of New York. The bus will stop at the famous Museum of Ancient History next, where we'll take an hour or so to explore the finest collection of natural, nature ever collected, including the Hall of Man, the Egyptian Wing, the mummies of the ancient pharaohs, as well as several of the daddies. And the wildlife exhibit of, wildlife. Any questions?
Yeah, I got a question.
Shoot.
How long you been conducting this tour?
Well, as a matter of fact, lady, this is my first time around.
Yeah, that's what I thought. All my life I ain't been inside a museum even, so I finally decide, Linda Kugelman, it's time for a little culture. So what happens? I get a dodo.
Well, it's life, kid. You gotta take your chances, but I'll do what I can to liven up the tour.
That kind of enlightenment I can live without.
Any more questions?
I'd like to ask a question, if I may.
Anything, yeah, sugar.
Is it true that they all have real dead people inside them, their sarcophaguses at the museum?
Yeah, that's right, sugar.
Why, that's scary.
Well, Acme Guided Tours guarantees to protect its clients at all times, sweetie. And seeing that there are only three clients on this tour, why, I'll take special care that nothing happens to you.
Hey, kid.
Yes?
Ixnay on the Idgay, which means look out for wolves.
If you mean Mr. Fortune, our guide, well, I'm sure he's a gentleman. Aren't you, Mr. Fortune?
Well, it's up for grabs, but I'll try.
Mr. Fortune?
Colonel Portis?
Being in the oil business back in Waco, I'm naturally interested in the natural formations in this part of the country.
Naturally.
Can you tell me, sir, what that formation over that way might be?
Well, if you mean the blonde walking down the street, Colonel, that is a product of the Ice Age. And if you mean the rock-like structure behind her, that's a public washroom in Central Park.
Oh, boy, you should be on television. You're a scream.
Yeah, thanks, Sadie. I was on the radio once, but my mom made me get off. I was scratching the top. Yuck, yuck, yuck. All right, everybody. Everybody out. Museum of Ancient History. Please wear your green tags and follow me. We all pile out of the bus, and I lead the way into the museum, wondering how I'm going to fumble my way through the next hour. Right behind me is the cute little blonde from the land of cotton. Behind her is the redhead from Brooklyn, and bringing up the rear is Colonel Porches. Handlebar mustaches trailing like banners. The first place we breeze through is the Egyptian wing. Now, if you folks will all step over this way, we have a genuine example of a rock job brought over from Egypt, which is called, according to the guide pamphlet, a monolith from the Temple of Osiris. Follow me, please. Just a minute.
Sir?
Where's Linda, the redhead from Brooklyn?
Why, she was with us when we went inside that scary old King Pharaoh's tomb back there.
Well, I haven't seen her since we came in here, come to think of it.
I'll give her a blast. Hey, redhead!
Perhaps we'd better conduct a searching party.
Look, I'll go back to the tomb. Colonel, will you take a look in the Hall of Man? And honey?
Yes?
You better stay right here in case she comes along. We'll all meet back here in 5 minutes. Let's go. I go back to the tomb of King Tut, Amon, or whatever his name is, and walk inside. The place is as empty as Santa's bag the morning after Christmas. I'm just about to leave when I see what looks like a piece of red silk sticking out of a stone sarcophagus that's up against the wall. I go over and give the cover a heave. Inside is the body of Linda Kugelman, stone dead. I turn around to go for the gendarmes just in time to feel a ton of concrete descend on the back of my skull.
Isn't he cute laying there? Just like Moses in the bulrushes.
Oh.
He seems to be reviving.
I'll get some ice for him.
Oh, who dropped that pyramid on me?
Easy, boy.
You'll excuse the expression, but where am I?
The office of the curator. This young lady is Miss Fabian, the curator's secretary. How you all feeling, boy?
Like I've been sanforized.
I like to thought you all was dead when I came bunking in that there tomb.
Speaking of dead, did you see the body?
You all was stretched out like a wet corn pone.
Not my body, Colonel. Linda Kugelman's.
The redhead?
She was inside that that trunk in there, dead.
The poor man was hurt worse than we thought. I'd better call a doctor.
Hold it, miss. This is no dream. I saw that body inside the sarcophagus.
We'd better open it and have a look.
We'd better not disturb anything.
I think we ought to send for the law, son.
Good. Let's have the phone. Hello, Sergeant Hamilton Finger, please. Here, I'll wait. Hello, Sarge. Rocky. I got a corpse. In King Tut's tomb. No, it ain't a Halloween joke. It's over at the Museum of Ancient History. Yeah, get your fat feet over here. I'll see you. I spend the next few minutes nursing my noggin until Sergeant Finger flippers in the curator's office. We all head for the tomb of King Tut.
You sure this dame is in there?
I saw with my own eyes, Sarge.
Okay. Who was she?
The name on her tour ticket said Linda Kugelman.
What'd she look like?
Like she'd been around more than once.
This the spot?
Right in here.
You all don't mind if we don't go in, Sergeant? It's scary.
You wait here. Let's go, Rock.
That's it, Sarge. Inside that stone coffin there.
Open the lid.
Right. Holy smokes.
Linda Kugelman. Girl mummy, huh?
I swear she was in that coffin not more than 15 minutes ago.
This guy has been in there 15,000 years by the looks of him.
Somebody moved her.
Rocky, old man, this may come as something of a blow to you. But one more crazy trick like this and I'm going to put you in the closet.
It's no joke, Sarge.
You bumped your head on the stone and thought you saw a body. Now forget it. Come on.
Is she a mean?
There's nothing there but a mummy. Go home, all of yous. You mean Miss Linda just vanished? But where? Maybe she's hiding in your mustache, Uncle. Okay, Rocky, now you remember what I said. One more false alarm and I'll throw the book.
By this time, I'm beginning to wonder myself if I really saw a body in that box. I give another yodel for Linda Kugelman, but she doesn't show. So I hustle Handlebars and Honey back into the sightseeing wagon. As I get the motor started, things begin to happen. Okay, honey?
Yes.
Ready, Colonel?
Ready, son.
Next stop, Grant's tomb.
Just a minute, Mr. Fortune.
What now?
I think I found Miss Kugelman's pocketbook stuck way down here on the seat.
Oh, let's have a look.
Right here it is.
I guess she won't mind if we open it to find out where she lives. Well, well, look at this stack of letters all wrapped in nice, pretty red ribbon.
Son, I think you all had better hand those letters over to me.
Now, just a minute, Pop.
I said hand them over, boy. This ain't no bubble pipe I'm holding against your head.
Yeah, I heard you good. You wouldn't be the gentleman who stuffed Linda's body in that mummy case, would you?
The letters, boy.
Be my guest.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Just loan me the body of your little bus.
Hey.
I'll just take it a few blocks and leave it, son. You won't get in no trouble. Now, if you and the young lady will kindly step out.
Better do like the man says, honey.
Well, I do declare, I never expected a southern gentleman to act like this.
Step down, ma'am. Thank you. Buenas noches. I'll leave the bus a few blocks down.
Honey and I stand there like a couple of outfielders watching one sail over the fence while Colonel Lucius Porteous drives away in Ackerman's dinky little sightseeing bus.
What now, Mr. Fortune?
That's a good question, and I wish I had an answer.
As long as we're here at the museum, supposing we finish our tour.
As a matter of fact, baby, that's not a bad idea. Something tells me our friend Colonel Porteous had something to do with Linda Kugelman's recent demise. And the removal of her body, too. We hustle back into the museum, and I start looking around for one fresh corpse, which is not an easy thing to locate in a place the size of a museum.
But, Mr. Fortune, we've already been in the Pharaoh's tomb.
I know, baby, but if that body was moved, it was moved from here. So let's have a look around.
It just doesn't seem possible that somebody carried a dead lady through the halls without somebody remarking about it.
Yeah, you're right there.
Unless there's another entrance to this little old tomb.
Uh-huh.
My goodness, there must have a place there so a party can breathe.
Air conditioning. Baby, don't ever let anybody tell you you're dumb.
What are you doing?
Just gonna have a look behind the vent in this air conditioning pipe.
Oh.
Yeah, oh. That's all right. Whoever killed her came back, conked me, and stuffed the body in that air vent. Come on.
Where to?
The curator's office. I want to make a phone call to my pal Sergeant Finger.
Come in. Yes?
Pardon me, my name's Fortune, Rocky Fortune.
Oh, yes. My secretary told me. You're the young man with hallucination.
That's right.
My name's Deems, curator of ancient art. What can I do for you?
Call the cops. My hallucination is laying in the air vent with a broken head bone.
Are you serious?
Take a look for yourself if you don't believe me.
I certainly intend to.
You mind if I use the phone while you're gone?
Help yourself.
Operator, give me the police headquarters. Make it fast. Finger is there in less time than it takes to say Pithecanthropu erectus. And we head for the tomb of King Tut once again.
You say she's in the air vent, huh?
So help me, Sarge. Ask Honey here.
Well?
There she was, as big as life. I was never so scared in my whole life.
The curator's in there now.
Okay, let's go on in. Oh, I see the police have arrived.
Sergeant Finger, Mr. Deems.
Sergeant, I regret all the confusion this unfortunate man here has caused.
Skip the apologies. Let's see the corpus delicti.
Of course, that's just the point, Sergeant. There is no corpus delicti.
What?
Hey, are you kidding?
You can see for yourself. This airway is perfectly empty.
Fortune.
Sarge, I tell you,
Fortune, you're coming with me.
Now, look, maybe if we call somebody in for a search.
Nobody gets called, Fortune. You're mine.
Sarge, Hamilton, control yourself
now. I'm going to lock you up, Fortune.
You need a charge.
Not in jail, Fortune. In the booby hatch.
I'm telling you.
You're telling me nothing. Now, come on.
Sure. Anything you say, Sarge. Only before we go.
Yeah?
You ever been locked in a tomb?
Not recently.
Well, I got news for you. Locked in one now.
Hey, grab him. The door!
Bye now. I slam the steel fire door shut and take off down the Egyptian wing like Pharaoh with the frogs after him. I hear Finger get the door open again and his delicate brogans come pounding down the marble in hot pursuit. Arguing with his Stone Age Dick Tracy is like flagging down a bomber. So I duck into the nearest exhibit, which happens to be the Hall of American Indians. They got a dugout canoe there, 50 feet long, paddled by a gang of wax Indians. I jump in, toss a Navajo blanket over my shoulders, and make like I'm stroking the Carlisle crew.
He came down this way. Fortune! Fortune, come on out!
He must have gone further.
Come on, he can't get far.
Finger in the curator, head for the medieval exhibit, and I'm just about to climb out of the canoe when Honey Gal comes in, followed by a couple of little kids on a grammar school outing.
Hey, Sammy, look at that! A real war canoe with Indians and everything! Oh, boy!
Excuse me, little boys. Have you all seen a nice-looking, dark-haired young man around?
Uh-uh, lady. Hey, Sammy, look at that Indian with a blanket on him. Boy, is he funny-looking!
You sure you all haven't seen anybody?
Uh-uh, lady. Hey, Sammy, dig them ears out of an Indian, will you?
If you should see him, little boy, would you tell him that Honey Fairchild is looking for him?
Sure, lady. Hey, come on, Sammy, let's go into the next hall. Oh, they're gonna close. Come on.
Does that bell mean they're closing?
That's right, lady. Come on, Sammy. Boy, did you ever see an Indian like that one? Hey, Sammy, let's get out of here. He just winked.
Oh, dear. I beg your pardon. I'm not in the habit of being addressed by strange northern warriors. If you want... Why, it's Mr. Fortune. I've been looking all over for you, honey. Whatever are you doing in that canoe with those Indians?
Well, if you give me a hand, I'll try to... Uh-oh, here comes Finger and Deems. Play dumb. That shouldn't be hard.
He must have got out.
I don't see how. There are guards at the exits.
Oh, here's Blossom Child. You seen your friend Fortune, honey?
Why, come to think of it, Sergeant, I did see him.
Where?
Well, he went through that door there, and then... Well, why don't you two gentlemen come with me, and I'll show you just where he all went.
Let's go.
Usually, they're really dumb. But every once in a while, you find one who's so good, she can even fool smart people into believing she's dumb. Honey Fairchild was one of those. When she'd led Finger and Deems out of the American wing, I resigned from the tribe and climbed out of my canoe. My first stop was the office of the curator of ancient art, Jeremiah Deems. Something told me that all was not kosher with this kid. Anybody home? Deemsy? No? Good. I'll be your guest. Nothing. Nothing. More nothing. Now, why would you keep this drawer locked, Deemsy, old boy? Let's just force it open. And have a look inside. Nothing. Nothing. Something. Seems to me I've seen this stuff before. My darling, it's been so long since... Uh-huh. Let's read some more. I know it is wrong for us to see each other, but...
You'll find the contents of my desk interesting, Mr. Fortune?
It knocks me out.
Anything in particular? Now, don't move. This gun is loaded, and I'm well within my rights to shoot you.
It's all very interesting, especially your tour tag with Colonel Porteous on it. Not to mention these letters that Linda Kugelman was using to blackmail you with.
Yes, I see you recognize them.
I took the liberty of reading a couple. You know, it's a pretty foolish man who writes love letters to a gal like Linda, especially when he's married.
Hand them over.
Help yourself.
You know, it's a pity I had to kill her, but then she wouldn't listen to reason. She bled me white.
You really had me fooled with that fake mustache and the phony Texas accent, Colonel.
Yes, I thought it was rather convincing myself, Mr. Fortune.
How did you manage to get Linda to take this tour?
Oh, quite easily. I suggested that if she took the tour and brought the letters to the museum, we could meet surreptitiously inside the Egyptian wing, and I'd give her the final payment.
Yeah, you gave her the final payment, all right.
She wanted $10,000. I thought I was getting off quite cheaply with only a few cents worth of lead pipe.
Okay, Deems, you're a big success. You pulled off the Colonel Porteous act, you knocked off Linda, shuffled her body around so not even the cops can find it, and you got your letters. The only thing you seem to overlook is little old me.
Oh, not for long, Mr. Fortune. You see, I have plans for you.
I can imagine.
Yes, Mr. Fortune. You're going to become a mummy.
At my age, Doctor?
After I've killed you, you'll be wrapped in mummy dressing and placed inside a sealed stone sarcophagus. Just think, you may not be found for another 10,000 years.
Well, at least until next Christmas, anyway.
Well, you don't seem particularly worried, Mr. Fortune.
I'm not. You see, I've got other plans.
Such as?
Such as putting out the light and leaving... to knock the lamp off his desk and beat it before he can find the reins. All I had to do now was figure a way out. The museum was closed, the lights were out, the doors were double locked, and I didn't have a key. I dove through the first door, which happened to be the medieval exhibit. About 100 suits of armor, clubs, wooden horses, and shields. I figure I'd play it smart and climb into a bulletproof suit before Deemsey gets there with the artillery. So I managed to squeeze inside a little number designed by Richard the Lionhearted for the Crusades. I pull on the shoulder plate, pull down the visor, and make like a dead Saracen.
Fortune, I know you're in here. You may as well give up. You can't get out. It's no use, Fortune.
I figure I'll wait him out. But after a few minutes of this, my right arm begins to get tired, since I'm holding it up over my head with a 40-pound axe in it. The arm slips down and the elbow joint creaks like it ain't had a shot of oil in a few thousand years.
Well, well, you've given yourself away, Mr. Fortune. Let's see now. Would you be inside the 11th century harbor? No. No, not there. Perhaps the 13th century suit of armor. Let's lift the visor and have a look.
At this point, I figure I'll take a chance the suit is really bulletproof and go after him with a battle axe.
Ah, then you must be in the English armor, the Crusades type.
You're getting warm, Deemsey. You'll be a lot warmer in a minute because I'm coming after you right now.
Oh, really, Mr. Fortune? Don't you know that armor's so rusted it couldn't possibly move? Oh, you're trapped like a sardine in a can, Mr. Fortune. Like a sardine in a can.
When I try to move, I see that Deemsey's right. I can't budge. I stand there like an iron deer on somebody's front lawn while Deems lifts the visor and pokes his 44 into my bridge work.
Your new suit is very becoming, Mr. Fortune. How do you like it?
If you'll have your tailor grease up the lapels, I'll wear it home.
The tailor's out just now, Mr. Fortune. But after I pull this trigger, you can change it for a wooden one. Right now!
Fortune! Hey, Fortune, where are you?
Oh, in here, over here.
What in the...
Oh, Rocky, are you all right?
I think so. What happened?
Miss Fairchild, you convinced me I ought to give the place one more look-see for the redhead's body. I found it in the closet in Deems' office, and we heard the noise and sneaked in here.
How's my boy, Deems?
Boy, I had to put some lead in him. He ain't so good. Hey, how about getting out of them cast-iron overalls?
I'm stuck. No kidding. Sarge, I'm dying in here.
Oh, you poor man. Is there anything I can do to ease the pain?
Yeah. Come to think of it, maybe there is, sugar.
Will you just name it, Rocky?
Yeah. Oil me, will you, kid?
NBC has presented Frank Sinatra as that footloose and fancy-free young gentleman, Rocky Fortune. Others in tonight's cast included June Foray, Gloria Grant, Barney Phillips, Dick Beals, and Dan Riss. Tonight's script was written by George Lefferts. Howard Wiley directed. To tell you about next week's transcribed adventure, here's Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
This ain't exactly the season for 4th of July celebrations, but next week I'll tell you about the time I almost got to be a Roman candle and the biggest explosion since they took the cork out of Vesuvius. See you around.
Millions millions of people behind the Iron Curtain are victims of vicious lies about the United States. Yes, communism continues to take the initiative in the propaganda war. We must not only stop the spread of communist influence among peoples that are still free, but we must also fight the tyranny of those it has already enslaved. The support of all Americans is needed. The Crusade for Freedom offers each of us as individuals the opportunity to strike a blow for freedom through Radio Free Europe, an independent citizen-sponsored organization which broadcasts the message of democracy through the Iron Curtain every day, hour by hour. Join the Crusade by contributing your truth dollar. Send your contribution to Crusade for Freedom in care of your local postmaster. Visit with Fibber McGee and Molly tonight on the NBC Radio Network.
This was a first time playing A Rocky Fortune on the Grand Hour. That was episode 15, The Museum Murder, with an original air date of the 19th of January, 1954. Now, I'm going to fulfill an FCC obligation.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book. Take a walk. Unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September. Paint a self-portrait. Catch up on a TV series. Do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This show's previously recorded.
Thank you, lads, for the second half of the show. I'm going to play Literary Discussion. It's episode 34 of The Mel Blanc Show that aired on the 22nd of April, 1947.
Presents The Mel Blanc Show, written by Mac Benoff, with Mary Jane Croft, Joe Kearns, Hans Conried, Elvia Allman, Jill Walker, Bud Whittem, the sportsman, Victor Miller and his orchestra, and starring the creator of the voice of Bugs Bunny.
What's up, Doc?
Yes, Colgate tooth powder for a breath that's sweet and teeth that sparkle brings you The Mel Blanc Show, with Mel playing his new character, Zookie.
Hello, Hi!
And starring himself in person, Mel Blanc.
Hi, folks. Ugga, ugga, boo, ugga, boo, boo, ugga.
It's a warm spring day in Mel Blanc's little town, and young couples' thoughts are lightly turning to, thoughts. Everybody has springitis, and we hear Mary Baker saying to her boyfriend, Warren,
Gosh, Warren, I've been tapping my feet all day long.
Gee, I wish I'd known, Mary. We could have gone to a dance tonight.
And elsewhere, we hear Barbara Bevan saying to her boyfriend, Jerry,
Gosh, Jerry, I've been tapping my feet all day long.
Gee, I wish I'd known, Barbara. We could have gone to a dance tonight.
And in Mel Blanc's Fix-It Shop, where we find Mel and his girl, Betty Colby, Betty is saying,
Gosh, Mel, I've been tapping my feet all day long.
Gee, I wish I'd known, Betty. You could have cracked some walnuts for me.
Yes, Mel is being very evasive, and believe it or not, he doesn't want to take Betty out. It seems that Mel, having made an impression on the town's society leaders with his impersonations, had become quite a social lion. So now let's look in at the Fix-It Shop and listen to the lion roar.
I'm sorry, Betty, but I can't take you to the movies tonight. A man of my social position only attends operas, concerts, political lectures, and art exhibitions.
But, Mel, they're showing a Betty Grable picture.
Let's go. That's one art exhibition I must see. No, Betty. Betty, no bourgeois cinemas for me. I've even turned in my Roy Rogers badge.
Oh, come now, Mel.
And Betty, please don't call me Mel anymore. From now on, it's Melvin Jerome Blank the Third.
The Third? You mean this has happened twice before?
Yes, my grandfather was first, my father was second, I'm third. When I have a son, he'll be home plate.
Who's playing shortstop? Oh, Mel, just because you went to a party is not...
A party? Betty, dozens of parties. Yesterday, I was cocktailing at the Vanderpoofs at 7, cocktailing at the Lenahan's at 8, cocktailing at the Brooks at 9.
What were you doing at 10?
Ice bagging at home.
Well, then you can't go with me tonight, huh?
No, Betty. Tonight I've been invited to the mansion of Mrs. Grimes, the society leader of our town. Boy, I can't wait till I get there. I'll kill him with my impersonations.
Oh, here comes Father. Hello, Father.
Oh, hello, Betty.
Hello, Mel. Neighborly greetings to you, Squire Colby.
Squire Colby? Such affectation. You big ninny, you're ruining my supermarket with the way you fix things. What did you do to my sausage machine?
Oh, I fixed it, Mr. Colby. Well, I didn't have enough parts, so I put some in from a cigarette-making machine.
A cigarette-making machine? No wonder those sausages came out with cork tips.
Well, what are you worried about? No other sausage can make that statement.
Looking at you, I often wonder, how long can a person live without a brain?
Don't worry, Mr. Colby. You've got plenty of good years left yet.
Come along, Betty. Let's not waste our time any longer.
Humph! Good day, Squire. Gosh, I must have sounded like an awful heel to Betty and her father. But if you want to get ahead in the world, you gotta be tough. I better practice my impersonations for Mrs. Grimes. Oh, here comes Mrs. Grimes herself. Ah, greetings, Squiress Grimes.
Oh, Melvin Blank. Oh, the effervescent exuberance of spring. Melvin, I'm blossoming all over. I'm budding. Oh, I'm a tree.
Well, don't look now, Mrs. Grimes, but your sap is showing.
You know, ever since you flitted into our social set, we've become rejuvenated. Oh, I feel like a spreading bough. I feel like a fruit-laden tree. I feel like a leafy elm. Oh, and you've done it all.
I feel like a sack of Vigoro.
Melvin, tonight my party, and you'll be there. Weather is so beautiful, I can't contain myself. I love life. I want to live.
Yeah, well, why should she kill it for everybody else?
Drink my sponies, drink all I can give.
Somebody ought to put a Mickey in that drink.
I love life. Oh, Melvin, tonight your social star shall ascend.
Oh, you mean I get a chance to do... I get a chance to do some more impersonations?
No, Melvin. Tonight, we shall be serious.
Serious?
We are going to have a literary quiz, and you shall be our Clifton Fadiman.
Sure. Sure, Mrs. Grimes.
Oh, Melvin, call me by my first name.
All right. Methuselah. Methuselah. Gosh, what she could do for that Brooklyn infield. Well, what can I do for myself? A literary evening. I don't even know a Longfellow from a short beer. Huh. They want me to be Clifton Fadiman, and I can't even be Clifton Finnegan.
Use Colgate tooth powder, keep smiling just right. Use it each morning and use it each night. It cleans your teeth, makes breath so sweet. Use Colgate tooth powder.
want teeth that sparkle and dazzle, a breath that's fresh and sweet? Then try Colgate Tooth Powder, for the new all-purpose Colgate Tooth Powder cleans your teeth and sweetens your breath. Yes, this new all-purpose tooth powder produces an amazingly rich, active foam that's marvelously effective. Every time you brush your teeth with this new all-purpose Colgate Tooth Powder, your whole mouth feels clean, sweet, fresh. Your teeth regain their natural sparkle. It's been proved in 7 cases out of 10 that Colgate Tooth Powder instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in the mouth. And as for cleaning, you can depend on Colgate Tooth Powder revealing the natural brilliance of your teeth. Yes, Colgate Tooth Powder, the new all-purpose tooth powder, does everything you can expect or ask of a dentifrice. Try Colgate Tooth Powder today for teeth that sparkle and a breath that's sweet.
Use Colgate Tooth Powder.
Now, Victor Miller, the sportsman, and Alexander's Ragtime Band.
There's a band that's coming to our town. La-da-la-da-da-da-da. They play most anything from conga to hoedown. La-da-la-da-da-da-da. So, come on in here, come on in here, Alexander's Ragtime Band. Come on in here, come on in here, it's the best band in the land. They can play a bugle call like you never heard before. So natural that you want to go to war. That's just the bestest band in the land.
Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Come on along.
Yes, yes.
Let me take you by the hand to see the band.
Up to the man.
What man?
The leader man.
That man.
He's the leader of the band. If you care to hear the Swanee River play in ragtime, come on and hear Alexander's Ragtime Band. Take you by the hand. Up to the man, who's the leader of the band. And if you want to hear the Swanee River played in ragtime, when you hear Alexander, come on, come on and hear Alexander.
Tonight's problem is, how can Mel hold up his end of the literary evening to which Mrs. Grimes has invited him? But when it comes to things literary, Mel is strictly blank. Right now he's in his fix-it shop trying to think of something very literary when in comes the town Beau Brummel, Hartley Benson.
Hello, Hartley. It's good to see you.
Naturally, Mel, old boy. It's always good to see great big adorable me. So sweet, I could throw myself at my feet.
Hartley, for once you don't bother me. Now that I'm in society, I can look down on you.
Lovely sight, isn't it? I went to a society dance myself last week, Mel. The girls were dressed in tight-fitting dresses and low-cut gowns, but all eyes were upon me.
What were you wearing?
A strapless tweed. Oh, but was I mad? I had one dance with a ravishingly beautiful blonde when a man cut in and said, I want to dance with the most gorgeous creature on the floor.
What did you do?
What could I do? We danced. The music was supplied by Phil Spitalny and his all-girl orchestra. But when I entered the hall, the girls all stopped playing.
Why?
Mel, old boy, you can't pant and play the trombone at the same time.
Who wants to be a hit at a dance? I'm a big shot in real society.
Well, Mel, I'm being featured in an advertisement that is real society. It carries a picture of me, and underneath it, it says, he's lovely, he's engaged, he's marrying himself. Yes, yes, yes. As a matter of fact, my face may be on the cover of Look.
Hardly with a face like yours, I'd look for a cover.
Oh, that does it. You made me indignant. Why, I'm so indig, I could nant. Good day, Mel, you buffoon, and I leave you with the words of the immortal John Keats. A thing of beauty is a Hartley Benson. So long, nice seeing me.
I don't know anything about literature. I think I'll call up Mrs. Grimes and tell her I can't come.
Hello, Mel. Ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo, ugga.
Greetings, great and mighty zebra. Ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo, ugga. What's the matter, mighty potentate? You look tired.
Oh, I am, Mel. I haven't slept a wink in nights. Lately, my wife's been walking in her sleep.
Well, why should that keep you awake?
All night long, I run around opening up windows.
Mighty potentate, you live on the fourth floor of an apartment house. You wouldn't want your wife to fall out, would you?
Ha! She's got a new thing now, Mel. She goes to bed with hot water bottles. Mel, it's like sleeping next to a stack of old tires. Last night, though, she was in a good mood. She kissed me 10 times. Tell you, Mel, it's like being trapped in a convertible with the top going up and down.
What did your wife look like when you married her?
Well, Mel, she was young, and at that age, most women have a schoolgirl complexion.
Well, how did her complexion look?
Like she was expelled. She also had a mole on her chin, but it was hardly noticeable. Her nose covered it.
Well, her nose couldn't be that long.
No? Then why is it when we go to the zoo, the elephant feeds her peanuts? As a matter of fact, she could lead the Republican parade, except for one thing.
What's that?
She's got such long ears, the Democrats want her too. What a woman.
Well, you sound a little peeved.
Well, the other day I drove my wife downtown to do her shopping. And just as we were on the bridge crossing the river, she said,
Oh, John, you can drop me anywhere you want to.
Gad, what a temptation. Telling you all this. It's just that I'm
not alone. Mighty potentate, listen to my troubles. I'm going to a literary discussion at Mrs. Grimes' house, and they'll ask me a lot of questions, and I can't answer them.
Oh, Mel, that's an easy problem. Just get yourself an encyclopedia.
What's the good of that? I can't bring it with me.
Well, I'll help you out, Mel. You have Zuki bring the encyclopedia to me, and tonight I'll hide outside on the balcony of Mrs. Grimes' house. You stand near the window, and I'll whisper the answers to you.
But, mighty potentate, can you sneak up into the house without being seen or heard?
Mel, for 20 years, my life has depended on it. Where are we going now, Mel?
Where are you going, mighty potentate?
Well, I can do one of two things. I can go to the movies and see Johnny O'Clock, or I can go home and look at the face that'll stop one. See you later at Mrs. Grimes' house, Mel. So long. Ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo, ugga.
Ugga-ugga-boo, ugga-boo-boo, ugga.
Now to send Zuki over to get an encyclopedia and bring it to the mighty potentate's house. Oh, Zuki! Zuki!
All right, young man, you can browse around the bookshop. When you see something you want, just whistle.
Hey, okay. Let's see now. Some magazines.
What do you want?
That blonde behind the counter. No, I want an encyclopedia.
Well, here's one you might want. It's got all the latest statistics in it.
California. The average rainfall for California has been 9 inches, 2 feet, 6 feet, 10 feet, 12 feet. Run for the hills, the dam is broken.
The figures on California pedestrians are interesting, too.
Well, let's see. Automobiles knocked down 99 out of 100. They haven't got a chance.
Now, will you take the book?
Sure, wrap up the blonde.
mighty potentate, here we are at the Grimes house.
All right, Mel, now you go in and I'll go around the back way. Just stall them off till you hear from me. I'll be on the balcony outside the window.
Swell. I'll ring the doorbell. Hello, Mrs. Grimes.
Oh, Melvin, come right into the library. I want you to meet everybody. Everybody, come on. Meet Mr. DeKeister.
So charmed.
I'm pleased to meet... So charmed.
Lady Fortescue, delighted.
Delighted.
Lord Bumbledown.
Jolly, jolly,
the Raja of Magawani?
Mahari, I don't know. Don't go high on a Sahib.
Mahar. There you got me.
And Melvin, the Raja is here with the Maharaja.
Where's the Papa Raja? Oh, thank you.
No one was laughing at your beastly joke.
Melvin, sit down there by the window. We're past the literary discussion, and we're now taking up rock formations. I don't suppose you know the difference between a stalagmite and a stalactite.
Who doesn't? After three martinis, a stalagmite becomes stalactite.
Yes, I'm sure. And... No, Melvin. Stalagmites come out of the floor, and stalactites come out of the ceiling.
Well, that's funny. In my fix-it shop, they come out of the woodwork.
Lord Bumbledown, what are you laughing at?
Where's the Papa Roger? It's so funny, I shall laugh uproariously.
Melvin, you're causing entirely too much levity in this discussion. Now, I want to ask you a question.
Oh, Mrs. Grimes, do you mind if I open the window? It's a little stuffy in here.
Oh, not at all, Melvin. Oh,
thanks. Hey, Mr. Cushing, are you out there?
Okay, Mel, I'm all set.
Now, are you ready for the question, Melvin?
Go right ahead, Mrs. Grimes. I have a gentleman in the balcony. I mean, ask me anything you want.
I warn you, this is a stickler. Now, quiet, Melvin. This is the question. How many children were born in an average Italian city in 1925?
Hey, Mel, in the city of Florence, Italy, there were 50,000 children born.
Oh, I've got it, Mrs. Grimes. In 1925, a girl by the name of Florence, who lives in Italy, gave birth to 50,000 children.
Oh, now I get it. The Roger comes out of the woodwork. Oh, and strikes
him. I shall ask another question. What is the longest river and the highest mountain in South America?
Mel, the Amazon and the Andes.
I got it. Amos and Andy.
Melvin, you're being ridiculous. Now, my next question has... Oh, my goodness. Is that a face in the window?
Well, statistics show that last year, 30,000 faces...
Oh, it's Mr. Cushing. What do you mean by eavesdropping outside my window?
Oh, just a second, Mrs. Grimes. I'll take the blame for everything. Well, what's the matter now?
I just got it. Avis and Andy had 50,000 children. That's tremendously funny.
Shut up!
Well, Mel, have you had enough of high society?
Yeah, Betty. Back with the people of my own class. People like you and your father. People who appreciate...
Oh, Mel, stop yapping so much and get on with this game of checkers.
But, Mr. Colby, all I was saying...
Come on! Make your move before I break every bone in your body.
What did you say?
I said I'll break every bone in your body.
Ah, that's like music to my ears. I'm home again.
Use Colgate tooth powder, keep smiling just right. Use it each morning and use it each night. It cleans your teeth, makes breath so sweet. Use Colgate tooth powder.
A smile that dazzles, a breath that's sweet, teeth that sparkle. What a thrill to have all three. Then try Colgate tooth powder, Colgate all-purpose tooth powder. Its rich, active foam gets into every corner of your mouth to sweeten your breath. In 7 cases out of 10, it's been proved Colgate tooth powder instantly stops unpleasing breath that originates in your mouth. And when it comes to cleaning your teeth, you can't buy a dentifrice that does a better job than Colgate tooth powder, the all-purpose tooth powder. So for teeth that sparkle and a breath that's sweet, try Colgate tooth powder, the all-purpose tooth powder.
Use Colgate tooth powder.
This is Bud Heaston reminding you that Colgate tooth powder for a breath that's sweet and teeth that sparkle brings you the Mel Blanc Show every Tuesday. Next week, part of the country goes on daylight saving time. If your area remains on standard time, tune in to Mel Blanc 1 hour earlier. Be sure to join us again next Tuesday night for more fun with Mel and the people you'll meet in Mel Blanc's Fix-It Shop. Lovely Joan Bennett is another famous Hollywood star to rave over Cashmere Bouquet Beau Cake, the new cake makeup sensation. Joan Bennett says, "I'm wild over Cashmere Bouquet Beau Cake. So clever, so practical, with a makeup sponge in its own moisture-proof compartment right in the compact." Yes, Cashmere Bouquet Beau Cake, for the first time, brings you the makeup sponge right inside the case. Buy the new cake makeup sensation, Cashmere Bouquet Beau Cake, at cosmetic counters today. Remember, if your area remains on standard time, tune in Mel Blanc next Tuesday, 1 hour earlier. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That was episode 34 of the Mel Blanc Show, titled Literary Discussion, with an original air date of the 22nd of April, 1947. As I expressed at the beginning of the show, I wanted to play Household Names with Mel Blanc. You should recognize him as Bugs Bunny from the Warner Brothers cartoons, as well as Barney Rubble from the Hanna-Barbera series, The Flintstones. The first half of the show, I played Rocky Fortune, The Museum Murder, which starred Frank Sinatra. I believe they called him Old Blue Eyes. Thanks for listening. Here to the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, and or WMFO.org.
Wanna ask but I just stare. Can I run my hand to your car wash hair? Wanna ask, but I just stare. Can I run my hands through your car wash hair? With my soul in the sand, digging for gold in a hole in the bed, catching a ride from a band. I sat in the back of the van. They tried to make me understand, 'cause if I'm not in a band, don't mean I'm square. And if I am, Well, then I don't care. Wanna ask, but I just stare. Can I run my hands through your car wash hair?
Yes, they've gone. We've had to switch microphones out here. It's fantastic. And this other engineer came out. We have a whole new set of microphones, condensers. Price is wired in here. He looks like something dropped.
Perfection. Oh, lovely apple. Beautifully and completely.
Due to COVID-19, WMFO DJs are pre-recording their shows for broadcast on air. We can still accept phone calls, but the phone line is in voicemail mode. call 855-915-9636 and be sure to leave the DJ's name in the voicemail so we can forward it to the correct person. The following program was recorded earlier. Enjoy.